Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com and podcasting these programs on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, and many, many other locations. And we are very grateful that we have attained, in less than 2 years of podcasting, 11,300 plus listens. I'm just astounded at that number. I'm a big fan of milestones. When I hit 100, it was sort of a big deal. When I hit 1,000, but when I hit 10,000, I just was like, wow, hey, that's pretty neat. I know it took, 7 or 8 or 9, a year and 9 months, but so what? That's pretty cool. 11,300 plus listens. Thank you for all of you who have been listening to these programs, these podcasts. And I hope that you've been going to our guest's website by clicking on that little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner of the SoundCloud player, because it takes you to our guest's website where you can continue your evolutionary process. You can continue to learn and grow and be inspired. And we hope that you do just that. And if you like what we're doing, you like the work that we are doing, and you'd like to be a part of it, you'd like to support it, we would thank you right now for that, because we are looking for that financial support. And if you can do so, wonderful. If you're able to do so, we do have a PayPal and Patreon account so that you can contribute safely and securely as well. And any amount is grateful. We will also take energetic support as well. Our program today is going to be dealing with an issue that I think our guest is so ever so qualified to talk to us about. There's no question. She's a doctor, Julie Brown, and she is working with Transforming Trauma. We're going to be talking about her particular work and the work that she's been doing with her background of 30 years in psychological, somatic, and spiritual traditions that provide a unique depth of knowledge and experience, and also that her psychological and spiritual study and practice has enabled her has a deep passion for to resolve trauma, reducing stress and suffering, and cultivating compassion and joy in our lives. And Dr. Julie, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
You're welcome, Richard. It's really lovely.
I guess the first question I want to ask in defining our terms, as I like to do at the beginning of these programs, is what kind of trauma are we talking about?
My specialty is developmental trauma, or early trauma, relational trauma, it's also called. So that's the difficulties we encounter in childhood. It could be beginning in utero all the way through to 10, 12 years old. And the impact of those difficulties that happen to us stay within the body or split off from our consciousness and then begin to create symptoms or disruption in our lives as adults. So that's mostly what I work with. I work with all types of trauma, though. There's many types of trauma and categories of trauma. So a lot of people understand trauma as those big, terrible events that happen to us, car accidents, falls, war, natural disasters, terrible traumas that can really impact people in significant ways. Developmental trauma isn't understood quite as much. Of course, we do understand the trauma that would come from childhood abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, and so forth. But I also work with the kind of trauma that emerges out of the fact that we don't get our essential needs met. So when a child isn't held enough, seen enough, felt nourished enough, nurtured enough, it feels very threatening for the child. And that experience of feeling threatened, if it isn't taken care of in a timely manner, that threat causes us to disconnect from the body to certain degrees, to create belief systems about being in the body or being in the world that can really limit our lives, our sense of aliveness and our joy throughout our lives.
And why did you go into this particular field?
It's a great question. I wish I had one simple answer, but there's a number of factors. I had a great interest in spirituality and meditation from being a teenager. I then had a great interest in the body because my meditation practice would open up these profound, phenomenal experiences within my body, and I wanted to understand more about that. I was also working in theatre as a teenager in England, and we would use the body to access emotions, and I found that extraordinary that by, you know, feeling into our bodies, we could access stored emotions, or by using our imagination, we could access somebody else's emotions and experience. And then I started to work in the field of body work because I thought that was so fascinating. Our body held emotions. It had all of this phenomena and spaciousness from the meditation traditions. And as I began to work with people, they started to have big emotional outbursts, if you will. And I realized I needed to understand our psyche a little bit deeper, or a lot deeper. So I went on to do a couple of degrees in psychology, and then I eventually did my PhD in developmental trauma and somatic psychology, understanding by then that trauma lives in our body. And so we need to have some amount of body awareness to begin to heal trauma. And trauma especially, I loved to work with. It's a specialized field because to me it is so fascinating, right? Our psyche and how we can split parts of ourselves off, but also how we can integrate that back into ourselves and create a more joyous, connected spiritual life.
I know that many of our listeners are certainly challenged by the whole aspect of trauma in their lives. I suppose that I could look back and think, you know, for the most part, my life's been pretty fairly uneventful. But I'm sure that if I was to really take a long, hard look, I probably would see, you know, certain events that generated a certain level of trauma. And if I'm understanding correctly, it doesn't take much, does it?
Not really, especially when we're young. I think a lot of people have an idea that infants and small children are really resilient, but they're more malleable. So infants especially need to be taken care of by a caregiver who has a capacity to be calm and soothing, so the child or the infant itself can learn to self-soothe. There's mechanisms in a child's body that aren't developed for self-soothing until about the first year, or it's developing in that first year. So we need a caregiver to be calm and soothing, to work as that soothing system for us. And so a lot of children don't experience that to the degree that they need. So that causes difficulties right from the get-go. And then, of course, there's a lot of other experiences, again, that people don't understand to be traumatic, but they are. It's our perception of the world and our body when we're experiencing distress. If that's not tended to in a way that we begin to feel safe and comfortable and soothed and loved, then we have these unhealthy beliefs that can really keep us limited in our lives later on. We also form a lot of what's called strategies or defenses to protect ourselves that, you know, arise to help us when we're young or in a traumatic experience. But if they keep going into adulthood, they're really, you know, worn out their time and also really limit us.
Well, it is something that we're all dealing with. There's no question about it. And it's something that we do need to get a handle on. And at the same time, I hear this comment from folks from time to time, especially in the context of a problem we have that I thought after I got out of school, we didn't have to deal with anymore. And that was bullying. And I've heard people say, oh, stop. It's no big deal. It builds character. It makes kids tougher and so forth. And the only response that I have for that is, okay, you say that today the bullying that your child is either giving or receiving is nothing more than character building. All right. So if this child grows up and continues to give and or receive, and especially give, the bullying, do you still just call it bullying? Or now do we start attributing criminal charges to this individual? Because quite honestly, from my perspective, Dr. Julie, that's basically where we wind up.
Yeah, I agree. I think bullying is a horrific problem. And both the bully and the person or the child who's been bullied both need some extra care and attention to see what's going on at home or in the environment that's creating this kind of behavior, you know, and to try and curb it or end it in childhood so this bullying behavior doesn't extend into adulthood where it becomes much more dangerous. Not that it's not dangerous as children. There's actually a high amount, I can't remember what the number is right now, but of children around the world who've committed suicide because they've been bullied. It's horrific, children.
Yeah, and wow. Yet at the same time, you know, and I have to say that my folks actually addressed this issue with me more after I was out of school than during. Then they did the best that they could, but they knew that they couldn't protect me. And I know that a lot of parents, they do the best they can, but at the same time, they also know that eventually this kid's going to have to face the real world kind of thing. And I'm not saying that my parents abandoned me by any means, but one of the things that they did acknowledge, and I was appreciative of the acknowledgement, was they said that we wish we could have done a better job of protecting you. And yet at the same time, I look, here I am almost 60 years of age, and I consider myself to be fairly well adjusted, you know. And yet I know that there are still some blocks in my life that are keeping me from maybe moving forward in certain areas, as there are in most people's lives, which is one of the reasons why you made available to the general public a wonderful book called The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma. Release trauma from your body, find emotional balance, and connect with your inner wisdom. When we take a look at a program like... I can't remember the title of the program, but it has to do with people who are 600 pounds in weight or more. And from what I've learned over the years, people who put on weight, whether it's you know, 20, 40, 60, 80, and on up, it's not necessarily a biochemical problem. It's usually due to a trauma, and they put the weight on to protect themselves. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair assessment. You know, eating, overeating, eating disorders can emerge from a lack of feeling attuned to when we're children. And it becomes a place where we need to fill some kind of a void, or it becomes a behavior that is helping us to avoid what feels really painful or scary inside. And we might not even remember what felt frightening or scary, but we just can use food, or there's no just about it, we use food as a means to block ourselves. And it's very, very painful. And I don't think there's so much understood about the trauma that's possibly lying behind that, especially early developmental trauma.
And so when we take a look at that, when we observe that from the standpoint of trying to get a handle on it, if you will, what is your recommendation for an individual who is going through that type of I'm going to call it a phase, because it doesn't have to be permanent and it doesn't have to kill you. But because losing the weight isn't the solution in the long term.
No, I would imagine if the root of the cause of that overeating or eating behavior that's unhealthy for an individual is uprooted and dissolved, dismantled and diminished, then the eating may go back to a more healthier, regular pattern, to a way of being. So it's looking inside and beginning to explore what is within a person that's preventing them to be able to naturally lose weight or put weight on, because it can be the other way, in a way that they can maintain this natural capacity of self-regulation, of being able to eat when we're hungry. And hunger comes when, you know, in a natural pattern, maybe three times a day, and keeps it as at a healthy weight. So it's looking inside, or having somebody explore with us, which isn't always as easy as it sounds, to look for that cause or that root. And they could be multiple. We're very complex. And so I don't know if I've got a recommendation for an individual, because everybody is so unique and has their, you know, own history to look at and probably various maybe patterns or defenses or strategies to look at. But beginning to develop a capacity of body awareness and exploration, a feeling of connection to ourself, having strong boundaries, and beginning to really feel safe in our body are good beginnings. And those are some of the exercises that I put in my workbook to begin to help people who may not be able to have resources or feel comfortable or many other reasons of working with a therapist or in a community right now.
There are some, and I have friends like this, who are actually quite proud of the fact that they're in therapy. They actually boast about it. And then there are others who they don't want anybody to know. I went through 4 weeks of specifically of therapy with a I don't know if it's a psychotherapist or what have you. It wasn't a psychiatrist. Four sessions, and walked out because I did not like the way the woman was talking to me about myself. It was like she was doing more harm than good. What is your thought about people seeking out therapy in this regard? And from your perspective and your practice and so forth, what is the stigma today? What is the general public's view of an individual, self or others, seeking out and going through therapy?
From my perspective and what I hear from most people, there's really not a stigma anymore. I think there used to be, but no longer. And I think that's changed with the understanding that trauma, and this again is from a trauma perspective, trauma is a normal part of being human. And we all undergo trauma to some degree. Trauma lives in our body, and trauma is relational. So we need to be in relationship with another person, and it's often very useful for it to be a therapist who can guide us through some of the most difficult aspects of trauma. So more and more people, fields in psychology, neurobiology, the different sciences are understanding today the importance of working with another person to help us get through trauma. Trauma usually embeds in our body because somebody is either hurting us or doing something to us, or we're perceiving they are harming us, or a loving, calm, kind, caring, or compassionate being wasn't there with us to help us calm and soothe at any age when a traumatic event or traumatic period was happening, and that allowed that trauma to embed within our system. So when we have another person working with us, it really helps us to dissolve and dismantle some of those trauma structures. The more and more people that understand that are realizing, oh, then we need to be in therapy to some degree to help us work this out, to help us reach our greatest potential as a human being.
The website that people can go to if they want to get more information, not only about you, but about the work that you're doing, as well as maybe purchase a copy of your book, is what? What is your website?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it's www.juliebrownyao.com, and Yao is spelled Y-A-U. So that's juliebrownyao.com.
And we will be linked to juliebrownyao.com. Here at Tell Me Your Story on SoundCloud. Again, as I mentioned at the front of the program, when they go to listen to the podcast, all they have to do is click on that little grocery cart and boom, there at your website, juliebrownyao.com. You talk about increased capacity for connection, aliveness, and vibrancy in our lives. And talk to us about the steps to achieving those aspects in our lives, because quite honestly, many of us, myself included, we're tired of surviving. We want to move from survival to thrival. How do we do that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, before I say how we do that, it'll probably make sense if I explain a little bit about what happens in trauma. When we are in an event or an experience that feels overwhelming to us, it's a little bit more than we can digest in the moment or assimilate or integrate, then our emotions and feelings can get split off from our awareness, if you will, or we push them down, repressing them. And when we do that, they don't just go away or disappear, right? They're affecting us to some degree, usually somewhat of a negative way. And our belief systems that are formed around that can also, as I spoke about early, limit us in a way. We can be disconnected from our body. We can be disconnected from even feeling emotion to any degree. And so in the healing process, what we are doing is touching back in and finding those split off emotions that are stored in our body or our psyche, and gently weaving them back into our body, if you will, because our emotions are our energy, they're our life force. And when they're pushed out of our awareness, to keep them pushed out is actually exhausting. And so we're using up a lot of our natural resources underneath our conscious awareness to keep those emotions and feelings and beliefs at bay. So once we begin to address them and find them and reweave them or integrate them back into our conscious awareness in our body, we find that we start to get more energy back. We start to feel a little bit more alive and more vibrant. And honestly, we start to feel a little bit more confident in who we are, because our sense of self or who we are in the world starts to become stronger. It's as if we start to walk with more uprightedness. And just our way of being in the world feels like we take our place in who we are, and we connect to what I call our heart's desire or our heart's longing or our dharma in life. There seems to be an ease in knowing who we are and what we would like for ourselves in the world, and moving into a flow where this just seems to open up to us with more ease. So that's the outcome that I found with working with so many people over the years.
Do you find that the traumas and the issues that are keeping people from pursuing their life's dreams and purpose pretty much the same?
The same meaning everybody's traumas are the same. Sorry, I don't know if I quite got that question.
Well, let me rephrase it. We all go through different levels of traumas in our lives, some greater, some lesser, and some of them we might actually work through ourselves. We begin to realize and understand. But the emotions that we all feel regarding trauma are pretty much the same. But the instances, I don't recall when I was a kid growing up ever having to deal with the issue of going to a public place and being worried that I might get shot. So that's sort of new for the 21st century in particular. We don't live in a place like, say, Syria or Lebanon or some other war-torn part of the world. So we don't face that kind of trauma. But again, the emotions, those are all still the same pretty much, aren't they?
Yeah, and the emotions are our human experience and are similar. Maybe it's the degree in which we feel them. So anger, rage, and then there's fear and terror, there's sadness, there's grief, there's shame, there's guilt. I'm putting all of those into, you know, a category of emotion. Different schools of thought don't call them all emotions. But these are all aspects of our being that to heal trauma, we often need to face because of the world today and because of our experience in the world. You know, a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of upset and sadness is just too much for us to be able to integrate. And it's affecting us really negatively. And a lot of it gets projected out into the world as well as cut off from us and turns back towards ourself. Like a lot of people have unresolved anger, but it turns into self-loathing or self-hatred. And then I think it's obvious in the world today where we see anger that's projected outwards and causes all kinds of violence.
Well, absolutely. I've still not been able to comprehend how it is that an individual who has had, from their perspective, an injustice done to them, whatever it may be, that's caused the trauma. Obviously, this must be part of the defense mechanism, feels that they have to avenge that act or get revenge, and that it never ends well for anybody. And it actually generates even more trauma.
Oh, absolutely. It is an aspect of trauma that many people experience, and it can be really disturbing, frightening, and upsetting. It is that aspect of revenge. When we normalize it and are able to see that as a feeling that can be part of trauma, it can be a part of the normal human condition, we don't have to act out those impulses. So once we know that it's a part of a trauma response, not in everybody, but in a lot of people, we can begin to address it internally and lessen that impulse and that feeling and begin to resolve it. So that experience of revenge is a huge problem for a lot of people, and it causes so much disruption. Most people, I would say, aren't going out and acting it out, but just the internal experience of it is really, really sad and upsetting for people. And of course, there are a lot of people who do act it out.
When people talk about this issue, and I brought it up, so I'll kind of follow up on this. When they talk about this issue of gun violence and how we've got to do something about it, and then they want to restrict, certain weapons to the general public, and then of course, then there's the outcry over the Second Amendment. Hey, you're taking away my right to bear arms. Is your thought and your perspective maybe this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment? This has to do with the psyche, the psychological, the mental makeup of the individual who carried out this act. We had a gentleman here in Santa Barbara, a young kid at the university, who started his rampage with a knife. And of course, my first thought was, well, then we better ban all knives, because that's what the problem is. And I was being facetious, of course. That isn't the problem, is it? It's not the weapon. We had another gentleman here just recently who outfitted his vehicle with reinforcements and killed a mother and her two children in his car by running head on into them. And so he's now up for three counts of murder. It's not the vehicle that's the problem. It's the individual who has those issues that we're talking about here that may have been started through some trauma, right?
I would agree. Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. The individual psyche, the family, the collective, and the cultural psyche. And it's bursting through in these outrageous bursts of violence. And rage and anger, like I said, are a huge problem. And it's one of those emotions that doesn't get addressed very well. And it's one of those emotions that can be split off from our awareness in unaddressed can begin to create havoc within us. These are going to spurt in, turn inwards towards us, or it's going to turn outwards at some point, either in, you know, verbally attacking somebody, blaming something, projecting it out, or worse, like some kind of violence where it bursts out. And of course, it's not as simple as anger. There's many, many aspects in an individual that could, you know, cause or bring about violence like that. It's a huge cultural, societal issue right now, I believe. But a lot of this, yes, I would suggest, begins with early trauma.
Although I would also raise the issue, and this is a sidebar that you may or may not choose to address, I still haven't been able to figure out why an individual in the United States of America who is not in the military needs to have an automatic weapon, an AK-47 or like, in their possession. I have not figured out why an individual needs something like that. Because if that's the case, I would like to purchase a nuclear bomb and keep it in my backyard, because I have the right to bear arms. I mean, that seems to be how far some of these folks are going. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have the right to bear arms if that's what the Constitution says. But it just seems like we're really grasping at straws sometimes, and I don't see it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes sense to me either. I don't know if that's the issue at hand from the perspective of trauma. It's let's explore what our internal difficulties are in our families, in our children, in generations before us, and see if we can resolve that. That's one approach to it. It's not going to be the end all, but, you know, from a trauma perspective, in my worldview, that's what needs to be addressed.
We're going to continue our conversation here with you. I want you to stay on the line. We're going to come right back after this break, and we're going to talk more about the work that you're doing, as well as the book that's available to the general public. And we certainly hope that you will avail yourselves of that book. And the title of that work is The Body Awareness Handbook, or I should say workbook, for trauma. Release trauma from your body. Find emotional balance and connect with your inner wisdom. We're going to come back and talk about the emotional balance as well as the inner wisdom as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us, staying with us, and being with us on the podcast as well as the radio broadcast. And a quick reminder that if you would like to find out more about the work that our guest, Dr. Julie Brown Yao, is doing, we encourage you to go to her website, which actually is her name, juliebrownyao.com. And, of course, the last name is spelled Y-A-U. I think you can figure out Julie Brown. We'll be linked to her, so you won't have to spell it. You just go straight there by clicking on the little grocery cart on the podcast page. Let's talk about this aspect of emotional balance. What does that really mean?
The way I speak about it is that when an emotion comes up, we are able to feel it. It'll have its time in our awareness in relationship to what might be happening around us. So it might be something sad, it might be something joyful, it might be, you know, grief, it might be anger. But it's appropriate to what's happening in the moment, in the moments following, and then the emotion leaves. It doesn't get disconnected, it doesn't get acted out. It's an experience we have that is very natural for a human being. Right. And so we're very balanced with our emotions. We have a capacity both for what we think of as pleasant, happy emotions, and we also have a capacity for sad emotions, because this is part of the human experience. When we have unresolved trauma, it's often very difficult to have access to our emotions in a healthy way. A lot of people become very triggered or unbalanced and become very overwhelmed when emotion comes up. So maybe they disconnect from their emotions. Maybe they act them out too much. Maybe they get afraid of emotions. So in healing trauma or resolving trauma, we are restoring that sense of balance where we can stay with an emotion and be present to it until it leaves. It's a very natural part of our human experience that gets distorted because of the difficulties that we encounter in life that have been too much for us.
In the process of living our lives, we don't come into this world with this, well, it's been referred to as baggage. This isn't something that we carry with us, or are you of the mindset, the philosophy of reincarnation, that maybe we do kind of carry this karmic baggage with us and that it is possible to get rid of this?
Well, even if we don't look at anything like reincarnation, right, but we look at the scientific understanding, knowing that we do carry trauma from our parents and our grandparents, at least, that we may not have experienced something ourselves, but the expression of our ancestors' trauma can express through us. So some of the work that I work with is that. And we can also have trauma, both physically and energetically, transmitted into us when we are in utero from the experience of the mother. Whatever she's feeling is directly, you know, transmitted into the fetus. And in our childhood, if we have parents who are depressed or disconnected, just the nature of children will also limit themselves, maybe shut down their natural joyous expression, because they sense in some way that that's disruptive to their parents. So we have very constricted parents because of their own trauma or their parents' trauma. It transmits into us. There's a knowing that if we express ourselves too joyously, it disrupts them, that it would somehow upset them. And so we naturally keep ourselves, or unnaturally really, but we have a way of closing ourselves down, and then we can live our life in a more closed down way. So trauma, there's so many more nuances that people understand. We can have a deeper version to something like anger, because our parents were angry in it, so it scared us to be angry. Or we just saw an angry look in their eyes, and that shut us down because it felt very threatening. Or we were told, don't be angry. And our natural capacity for what we call in the psychological traditions really healthy aggression, right? It's this sense of being able to have access to say no, to protest to an environment that might be hurting us. That gets shut down. So we are, you know, in resolving trauma, we are finding a way to be able to access those healthy boundaries and healthy emotions.
And those are sometimes hard to stick to in one sense, because there are many who some people are really very open and they're very genuine, and they're very vulnerable sometimes. They make themselves vulnerable. They want to be out there and sort of almost wearing their heart on their sleeve, if you will. And that can be a danger, too, because then there are others who are very self-absorbed, if you will, and they're out for self and they're out for nothing more than to get whatever they can, no matter how many people they step on, how many people they crush, so to speak, because that's the name of the game. You have the business psyche, and you have the educational psyche, and you have the, shall we say, the religious psyche, and the political psyche, and list goes on. What about those aspects and trying to maintain any kind of emotional balance? I want to put this question to you with the work that you have done. Using the scales of justice, so to speak, are your scales balanced, or have you achieved that balance yourself, or is it something that you achieve spits and spurts?
Well, I would say that we are all a work in progress, if you will. Just the nature of being in the human experience, there's always something to work on if we choose to. But the two experiences that you spoke about, the person who wears their heart on the sleeve, or another way to put that is somebody who's always sort of attending to the needs of others and caring for others, and becomes hurt by that or resentful for that because they don't receive anything back. That's a pattern that can come from childhood when our needs were not attended to. And so that was so painful. So we shut down our own needs and we learn to attend to the needs of others. Right? And it becomes a very painful way of being because we don't remember what happened to us. And again, people don't realize this might be early trauma. And I was just working with an individual recently who's saying, you know, I don't understand. I care and I give so much and so much and so much. And all of these people are just taking advantage of me. And we really, at the root of it, get to see, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I need. If I don't know what I need because I shut that down, then I'm just always giving, and then I end up feeling empty and feeling resentful and taken advantage of. So once we heal that root or that core and reestablish what our needs are, then we can restore some balance. On the other end of the spectrum, I work with some people who have gone through life with this great sense of what we call false pride, whose childhood experience was really difficult. So they've created this false sense of being where they're out to get whatever they can get, and they don't mind who they step on or what they do to get what they get. Some of these individuals, not all of them, at some point, you know, might find their lives have become very successful and very rich, but inside they feel incredibly empty. And when we dig down into the depth of that, there's a lot of shame, a lot of feeling bad about oneself. And it's this sense of pride that is overriding those other awful feelings underneath that are just too painful to get to. Not everybody's going to want to look inside and explore. Some people seem to be quite happy going on. But, you know, are they balanced inside? Are they really happy? Who knows? But there's lots of patterns that we can look at that emerge from early trauma that aren't so obvious. People just think, oh, this is just who I am and this is the way things are.
Now, there's a statement that is pretty prevalent. And in course, within the male half of the species, it's usually, I'm going to hide this stuff because this isn't the way men are supposed to behave, are supposed to feel, are supposed to be. And yet, by holding that stuff in, you later down the road, you start having those, we'll call them explosions, where the stuff pops out here and it pops out there through, in many instances, very antisocial behavior.
Yeah. We know today also that unresolved emotions or emotional stress is one of the leading causes of major diseases, like heart disease, cancer, autoimmune disorders, a number of diseases and disorders from emotional stress, right? So that keeping in, that holding back, that repressing or suppression or splitting off of emotion causes havoc, not only in our psyche, in our well-being, in our physical bodies.
So where do you begin with someone to help them to navigate all of those events, those experiences, those traumas, to reach that emotional balance?
So I always begin with someone wherever they are, meaning we work very much in the present moment because this is what's here now. And if we're working with childhood trauma, it's okay to have a little history, to have some understanding, but we don't need to go back and revisit trauma so much or do a deep psychological dig or archaeological dig back to our past. We can usually recognize patterns of early trauma in our life right now, in our relationships, in our work relationships, in our relationship towards ourselves. So we start looking at that and uncovering feelings and relationship to emotions, relationship to others. And once we start to resolve that, then information from our psyche begins to emerge from deeper aspects that might have been hidden that we weren't aware of, so that those memories that are stored in the body that are still present, even though they may have come from the past, start to emerge and we shed light on those and find a way to resolve that also. But a great place to start for anyone is really to begin to cultivate a relationship with their body and body awareness, which isn't as, it can be quite difficult because a lot of people are disconnected from their body because of the difficulties, the emotional difficulties that happened to them and don't even know that they're disconnected from the body. So in my book, I give a whole lot of exercises to begin to explore, what do I feel? What is my relationship to emotions? Do I feel safe in my body? Do I have a deep connection to myself?
Let's talk about the spiritual connection, if you will. One of the things that's sort of mentioned, the inner wisdom. Are we there talking about some type of connection to the divine, or are we talking about our intuition, that higher self of ours, that still small voice that speaks to us and guides us, not into harm's way? If you're hearing voices that are telling you to do that, that is not your, I don't believe that that's your still small voice. But where does this inner wisdom come from?
So there's a number of experiences that connect us back to our inner wisdom. So there's innate capacity within our bodies, given the right environment, so a healthy environment, where our bodies will naturally move towards wellness, well-being, or healing. So giving ourselves that healthy environment, which is, first of all, being aware of our body and its needs, and being able to acknowledge the feelings that our body is having, to be able to access those emotions that we've talked about quite a bit today, and very gently and carefully integrating them back into our body and our awareness, so they're not disturbing us in our unconscious, and any aspects of our being that may have been split off or fragmented, It's almost like we want to gather and collect and integrate those aspects of our being back into a sense of wholeness and unity. Then we have this sense of inner wisdom, which is, again, connected to knowing who we are, knowing what we need, a great sense of intuition that comes either from our gut, from our heart, and our mind, and a sense that we are more than all of these parts of ourself. And this is really the spiritual connection, and it can be experienced or perceived differently by any individual. Some people say they have a sense of being connected to the divine. Some call it source. Some call it this cosmic awareness. But this is a natural maturation in the process of healing trauma, is this connection to something that is much larger than we experience as our ordinary self.
You know, I do find it really interesting, too, when we talk about this aspect of intuition and this aspect of connectedness. Now, a lot of the work that you do reinforces that concept. There are several. I mean, you talked about, for example, somatic experiencing. You're a practitioner thereof. You also deal in dream pattern analysis, as well as you do use yoga, meditation, as well as several other modalities. And what can you share with us in reflecting upon our connectedness to one another and how these traumas that I personally and individually experienced affect the rest of the community?
Well, one thing that we've already spoken about is if we don't have the capacity to feel our own emotions, we often project them out onto others and blame others for what we are feeling inside. I think anger is a great example. You know, I'm not angry, it's you that's angry, right? It's your fault that I'm angry. You caused me to be angry. And that really doesn't resolve anything, but can cause defenses to come up in other people or to get a response back into anger. So once we begin to look internally or explore our own emotional balance, or what may be ours and what may be somebody else's, is going to be much healthier for relationship and the community at large, because we stop projecting, you know, what you called earlier, baggage onto other people. And also when we start to connect back to ourself in a deeper way and have this sense of unity or wholeness within, we begin to have much more confidence in who we are. So if we hear something negative about ourselves from another, we're not so affected. And we understand that so much of what people see about us, or even what we see about another, is partly the projection of our own experience onto them. So we begin to take this great sense of, I don't really like the word responsibility so much, but this, you know, understanding who we are as a human being, and are able to take multiple perspectives in the world. Maybe we become much more compassionate and not so reactive in the world when we resolve our trauma. There's a greater sense of an understanding of the human condition, which doesn't mean we're going to say everything is okay or enable it, but we are not going to react as negatively as we might if we have unresolved trauma.
Well, I think I need to share this because it's an element that has a lot of people worked up and has for the last 5 years, and they wish it would go away. And I remember in September of 2016, I wasn't even interested in the political landscape. And somehow, working for a news and information station, I got sucked in. And it took me 6 months, as I say, to get unsucked. Mm-hmm. And I went through three phases. The first one was, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I don't want to behave. The second phase was, I forgive you, but more importantly, I forgive me. And the third phase that I'm in right now, which seems to be pretty comfortable, is, you're a member of the human race. You have every right to be here. And I just have one question for you. What is it that you are so afraid of that you have to behave like this? I'm not being partisan. I'm not being judgmental. I just want to know. I'm not saying that you should change. That's up to you. But I'd just like to know, what is it that you're so afraid of, that this is the only way that you can communicate? When we start looking at those things around us, Dr. Julie, isn't that sort of the place that we need to come to, that place of compassion? This person is a fellow human being. I don't want this person dead. I don't want this person injured. But I wish that they would stop behaving the way that they are and wake up, but that's not my choice. That's theirs. My choice is how it affects me, how I choose to allow it to affect me. So what about that aspect of beginning to become compassionate? And again, we're not saying that the behavior is acceptable. We're just asking the question.
That's a beautiful perspective, to be able to look and to wonder, where is this behavior coming from? It's a very compassionate perspective. And compassion is a natural outcome of healing trauma, but I also really encourage people to cultivate or develop a sense of compassion, especially for themselves first. Then it naturally flows out into compassion for others, because compassion really allows us to have this greater sense of perspective taking, or to be able to hold other people's perspective. It helps us to develop a greater resilience in the reactivation or the reactivity towards other people's behavior. Because if we're all just reacting to what we don't like in the world, it just fuels the fire and disruption. But if we can step back, like you're saying, with this great sense of curiosity, and say, I wonder what is really happening in that psyche. Mm-hmm. At the very least, we're not participating in more negative behavior that is stoking a very unhealthy fire.
Yeah. We're not fueling it especially. And that seems to be the lessons that the majority of our population hasn't learned, is that regardless of which side you're on, you love him or you hate him, you're fueling the fire. And so we continue to divide and subdivide and subdivide and subdivide. And there's that great biblical passage, a house divided against itself will not stand.
Yeah, yeah. And trauma, if a lot of this is coming from trauma, unresolved trauma is very isolating and disconnecting. And there's a tremendous amount of fear at the base of trauma that feels far too much for us to face, or for some people to face alone. And so they create strategies and defenses to never have to go there to face it. Mm-hmm. And these individuals can create a lot of havoc in the world, or just in their families, or just for themselves. So it's a huge issue. And that's why it's really a wonderful time in the field of trauma and psychology that we are talking about trauma and bringing more education about it, so people can begin to understand some of the behaviors that are happening out there in the world or within themselves, and begin to work with themselves first before they step out into the world, or while they are trying to address different issues. So we come more from a place of compassion, not compassion where we are accepting behavior, but, you know, taking a stand in a way that isn't causing more disasters, if you will.
You have, and I want to kind of let our listeners know about this, you have some other modalities. You use neuroaffective relationship modeling. You, of course, again, we mentioned somatic experience approach, somatic depth psychological approach, as well as pranayama. Describe to our listeners what that is.
So from the yogic tradition, there's something called pranayama, which is working with the breath. So when I used to be a yoga teacher, that was just part of the practice. Our prana, our breath, is full of life force energy. And it's used in trauma sometimes to be able to bring us out of what we think of as a shutdown state or a collapse, where we might be more withdrawn or isolated in the world, just to help our body be able to feel a little bit more energy. Or we can use a pranayama to calm ourselves when we feel a little bit too overstimulated. There's some pranayamas that can help us to sleep, which is really nice. A lot of people these days are suffering from insomnia, and there's something that I've written in the book that can help address that in a very natural way, so people don't have to take sleeping pills or supplements to help them sleep. So these are just some extra exercises that, or practices that have been shown, scientifically proven, to help us both biologically and psychobiologically to move towards a greater sense of well-being, but especially researched lately in the last few years to help with trauma, in the sense that they can help us self-soothe or reach a state or move towards emotional balance or this state of self-regulation, which is sleeping when we need to sleep, eating when we need to eat, knowing how to take care of ourselves, and feeling more comfortable in our bodies.
The subject of trauma is a big one these days. I went through a lot of personal growth and development programs in my day in the 80s and 90s. I went through LifeSpring, which was an outgrowth of EST. And initially, I thought this was kind of a neat thing, although in retrospect, I have to wonder if that kind of quote-unquote group therapy, because that's really kind of what it is, beating the person down, taking them apart, so to speak, in the first three nights, and then rebuilding them over the weekend. I wasn't a fan of it as I was going through it. I learned some things about myself and as well as of mankind, as it were. What are your thoughts about group therapy in, say, those kinds of contexts, those 3 or 5 day intensives that people put themselves through?
I think the field of psychology has grown a lot, especially in the understanding of trauma, that if we are just talking about terrible things that happened to us or reliving in a big cathartic experience of what happened to us, it has really negative effects. It almost re-traumatizes us to some degree. What happens in some of those older therapies where we used to, you know, bash pillows and scream about our parents
an hour ago,
is we release all of these indigenous opioids that actually help us feel good. They're natural painkillers, if you will. So maybe for a day or two or even a week later, we feel really good because we've just, you know, given ourselves a boost of these hormones that make us feel good. But a couple of weeks later, we have to go back and do the same thing again. So we understand now that a big cathartic experience can be re-traumatizing, and we don't need to do that. It's the approach today is a lot more gentle and working with trauma in a much more gentle way, where we take small risks, feel a little bit more than might be comfortable, allow that to integrate, and then move on to the next piece. So the field is changing a lot, and thankfully, because a lot of people got re-traumatized, their defenses got stronger, they got further away from healing, more disconnected, more dissociated, and, you know, again, much more upset. So I've worked with a number of people who've done some of those programs or did some of those programs many years ago, and felt really tepid about coming back to some form of therapy until they understood what had happened to them. They were really re-traumatized, and that today the approach, for the most part, has changed, which is good. You know, we got a lot of understanding and information and knowledge from fMRIs, where we can see what lights up in the brain where people are doing particular practices.
And to that point, in the 80s and 90s, as I was not only participating but also observing, I noticed that we went from a phase of victimhood. We, you know, this was done to us and it's our parents' fault, or it's this person's fault or that person's fault. And then we started shifting and shifting and shifting until we got to a place where we began to realize that whoever it was that was involved was just doing the best that they could, just like we're doing the best that we can. They aren't to blame. And now it's my responsibility. And that was a big, dirty word for a while. My responsibility to deal with the issues, the baggage, if you will. But, and I'm going to go back to my previous example of the last 5 years. It seems like we've gone back to the 80s of victimhood. It's their fault that we are the way that we are, and we're going to do this and that and the other because they did this to us. And it's like, wait a minute. I understand the whole thing about if we refuse to learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it. I don't want to repeat that. Enough with the victimhood.
Yeah, I agree. Staying or standing in that sense of being a victim is not helpful. For some people, it's very hard to get out of that cycle. And that's why these somatic therapies are around now are really useful to help guide people out of that. The whole idea of taking responsibility is tricky. I don't like that word because it comes with a lot of history that isn't so healthy for us. But it's sometimes we were a victim of somebody as we were hurt directly by somebody else. But then as we grow and learn, there are ways that we can resolve that pain within us and stop that from perpetuating within ourselves and possibly outward into the world. So, you know, there's a balance of looking at where do I begin to look within myself to stop perpetuating, I like that word, what might have happened to me. For instance, in childhood trauma, if something bad happens to us as a child, right, something awful or something painful occurs to us, a child's only perspective is, oh, it's my fault, I'm bad. You know, we can't look at our parents or the environment, you know, if there's a revolution and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've been born into this world, that's terrible. You know, but it has nothing to do with me. No, a child will naturally feel that there's something wrong with them. And so that affects our self-esteem, our feelings of self-worth, which continues to allow us or feeds into that experience of victimhood. Whereas we can begin, if we have that sense, we can begin to shift that and recognize, okay, these terrible things happened, but it was not my fault. But I realize that in feeling bad about myself, I'm somehow perpetuating patterns that were created because of the environment that are no longer healthy for me or for my family or my workplace or my culture or society. So then it becomes somewhat empowering or internally empowering, if you will. We can move out of that sense of being a victim and cultivate that sense of self, who we are today, where we gather what I spoke about earlier is that sense of confidence in our being, in ourself, in our body, and being in the world, which is a much healthier way of being. I don't know if that helps or makes sense to some of that question you were asking from a trauma perspective.
Well, I'll tell you what, if it isn't clear, then we need to go to your website, juliebrownyao.com, so that we can get more information. We can even book an appointment with you on, I guess now you're using Zoom as well as Skype, to help people to work through these things a long distance. And I tell you what, as sometimes frustrating technology can be as far as separating us, I love the fact that there are those such as yourself who are using it to connect one another and for you to connect with people who are seeking support and help. Before we wrap up here, I would like for you to give us a little bit of a description and an understanding of one of your other modalities. I've heard of this before, and it's called a visionary craniosacral therapy along with myofascial release and energy healing. And those are the three big topics there. But how do those particular elements work together and how do you utilize those?
I don't work with those so much anymore. Those were modalities that I learned, you know, 30 years ago, I would say. But they become useful when somebody's experienced very early trauma and has a disconnection from their body, where their bodies really don't feel like a very safe place to dwell or inhabit. So that's where being able to do hands-on or some kind of touch is really helpful to people. because they can begin to feel supported in their body and feel, you know, feel what they didn't feel way back when the trauma happened. So a lot about healing trauma is to be able to give ourselves or receive from another what we didn't receive then. So some form of connection. So those modalities, you know, just trained me to understand the body, the subtle energies of the body, and the importance of touch. So I went beyond those therapies and learned more about trauma and the importance of trauma to address that.
Well, I encourage people to find out more by going to your website and getting in touch with you. And you're not that far away. I mean, yeah, you're down in Laguna Beach, which is a fair distance from Santa Barbara, but, you know, it ain't that far via Skype, okay? It's just a click away. So we encourage you to go to Dr. Julie's website. And I want to thank you so much for this time that you've given us really appreciate the work that you are doing, because it's with the work that you and others are doing that I think is going to make a big difference. I heard it said that, for example, in the monastic life, those who are around the world in monasteries and cloistered groups who are spinning the prayer wheel and chanting and so forth, right now they are sort of the glue that's holding this world together. If they were to stop, I think the earth would explode. And I think that you folks are the next line of support and healing for not the planet. The planet will take care of itself just fine.
Yeah.
But for the people, humanity. And I thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
I also would invite you, should you care to leave the enclaves of Laguna Beach and come on up to Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Yeah, I'd love that too. You're not too far away, so maybe we can set something up to do that. Trauma is such a vast and wide topic. There's so much more to explore and to say and to discuss.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we let you go, I do want to remind our listeners of the podcast as well as the radio broadcast, Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. And the podcasts are on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify, and many others. And then I have three final questions for you. You may have addressed them to some degree during the interview, but I like to ask them directly. The first one is, who is Julie Brown Yao?
That's a great question. You know, one of the beautiful outcomes of healing trauma, and this may be more from a spiritual point of view, but when we can drop all of these identities of having to be somebody, it's such a relief. So I'm giggling because, you know, I'm a regular person who has a deep spiritual practice, who connects to something much larger than myself, who has a passion for healing trauma. So that's what I do in the world. I'm a mother, and you know, that's almost it.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Really, there's a sense of the cultivation of compassion in individuals and societies and culture in the world. There was one dream that I would have that would be to see more of that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose. I think that's I don't have an answer for you, Richard. I have a sense of my own dharma and unfolding of my life's purpose, but I don't know if it's something to share so publicly. Part of it obviously has to do with sharing my knowledge and my understanding of trauma and how it affects the world. So that's why I'm on, you know, programs like yours and why I wrote the book.
Well, I also encourage people to go get a copy of your book, which is entitled The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma. Release trauma from your body, find emotional balance, and connect with your inner wisdom. And I open this up to you as we wrap up the program. Are there any last words, advice, comments, bits of inner wisdom that you might like to share with us here at the end of the program?
Well, I just would like to say, if anybody who has an interest in trauma, who doesn't have that much understanding or awareness of it, this is why I wrote the workbook. So a lot of books on trauma out there are written for therapists or written in a way that's, you know, somewhat difficult to really understand, to be able to relate to, especially if you have unresolved trauma. So the workbook is written in a way that's really simple. I talk about different types and categories of trauma, and there's such a myriad ways to begin to heal or to begin to resolve that you can do with the book. And I put as much of myself in the book as I could, so it feels somewhat relational, that people can feel me. So it's a support, and it's a way to educate yourself, because one of the ways we can resolve so much trauma and stop passing it on, because it gets passed on if we don't resolve it within ourselves, is to educate ourselves about it. The more awareness we have, the more resilient to trauma we can actually become.
Dr. Julie Brown Yao, thank you so much for being on the program today. And I thank you for listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until our next broadcast/podcast, love, Talal.